So welcome everybody to the Side Hustle City podcast. As everybody knows, if you've heard our previous episodes, we're all about helping you turn that side hustle into your main hustle, or multiple side hustles into main hustles. And we're very blessed today to have Mr. Greg Ryder with us. Hi, Greg.
Howdy, howdy.
Greg,
how
are you doing? You know, we're doing really well. And I think a lot of people are going to be doing a lot better once they listen to this podcast and hear some of the advice you have to give.
Let's hope so. We live in hope, right? You're taking a big risk.
Well, the challenge is going to be fitting it all in 60 minutes.
That's it. Yeah, that's one of our challenges. Our first couple episodes were about 2 hours each. So everybody's told us, hey, can you know, keep it to an hour, keep it to 45 minutes to an hour. So we'll see what we can do. But we reviewed your website. You know, we were lucky. A friend of ours, Kyle Bass, got us connected. Looks like you spent the last 15 years coaching entrepreneurs. You're an entrepreneur yourself, teaching people one of the main things and the hardest things about starting a business, raising capital. And it's a big challenge. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, no, I was real fortunate that you ever read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
We referenced it a couple episodes ago.
So I always tell people that book was written about me. And if you know Robert Kiyosaki, tell him I want my royalties, because I literally was born into a very, very wealthy Denver family. My parents got divorced when I was two. I lived with my mom, who got married, divorced, or actually married. So four different stepdads and stepbrothers and half-sisters. And then I would visit my rich dad, and my rich dad taught me to invest when I was 19, got me into a stock, and I put $2,000 in this stock called Denning's Mobile Robots. Never forget it. Turned it into $14,000 in like 4 months. So I got seven times my money. I'm like, this is easy. This is what I found my home. I'm gonna be a stock trader, stock magnate, you know?
Yeah.
And again, because I was, you know, one of the writers and Dirk Ryder's son, you know, we had different connections. I ended up getting my stockbroker's license and started, you know, getting involved in money management and trading the markets. And then I ended up buying then I read the book. Another great book that everybody should read is Think and Grow Rich, because I always want to tell the first place everybody has to start with anything is mindset. If you don't have the right mindset, the right philosophy, you're not going to accomplish anything. So I read the book Think and Grow Rich. And that led me to end up buying the firm I worked for and became the youngest owner of an investment bank in the history of the country. And that was my first big mistake in life. But I went on to raise, you know, hundreds of million dollars or more for early stage entrepreneurs and helping company and capital formation. And when I retired as an official investment banker, you know, I kind of went into just coaching and helping entrepreneurs, marketing, business development, financial projections, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, when you get in that world, and you see the joy that people have when they're successful at their own business, it just drives you. And obviously, I'll bet you guys could, you know, agree with that with what you're doing with this podcast. There's just the joy with hopefully helping and coaching people, you know, get things that they want. And I love a saying, and then see if it kind of leads to the next question, but I love a saying that I grew up with because I also was a personal development junkie. I got introduced to Tony Robbins and Zig Ziglar and Brian Tracy and Dennis Whaley and Jim Rohn. And I never forget what Zig Ziglar used to say all the time. Help enough people get what they want and you'll get what you want.
Yes, I've heard that before.
I've lived with that philosophy for decades.
Great philosophy to live by. And I also want to mention that you started this investment bank when you were 21. Was this all tied back to the success you found in the stock market early on, and you just got excited about it? And you were the youngest person in the history of the United States to start an investment bank, right?
You know, I started making so much money because, again, back then the stock market was hot. You could practically throw darts and make money in the early 80s. And then my dad had all these connections. He had what I call the good old boy club, you know, and he just pick up the phone and say, okay, buy this, sell this, buy this, sell this. We made money. I was making 20, 30, as much as 50,000 a month as a 20-year-old, 21-year-old.
Wow.
In the 80s. Yeah, that was incredible. The firm that I worked for, you know, like these real estate firms and stuff, and that back in the day is the firm I worked for, they took 50% of our commission. So there was me and about six or seven other guys, and between the seven of us, I think we were doing as much as 350,000 a month in commissions. And the guy that we worked for was taking half those commissions for just owning the firm. And I remember going to my dad going, dude, this guy's knocking down 100, 150 grand a month doing nothing. You know, that was like, that was the naivety of a 21-year-old, right?
Yeah.
I said, I want to buy him out. And he's like, my dad said, go for it. You know, because I was fortunate that I didn't have those parents that ever said, oh, you can't do that. That's stupid. you know, what do you think is, you know, I always had, you know, even though they were divorced, both my parents, they supported that entrepreneurial spirit and, you know, get it and go for it. So that's where I bought them out. But that was kind of a big mistake because I was 21 and Wall Street just ate me for lunch. I really didn't know what I was doing as far as running a business, you know, and all the stuff that goes with running a business and all the compliance with running a business.
Oh, my God, yes. So especially in the finance world. I mean, you got the SEC and everybody else and so much compliance work you have to do. And I don't know about in the 80s, but, you know, nowadays, I mean, it's grueling. I mean, you really have to know what you're doing. And, I mean, there's a lot of people out there that, that probably don't, and they get into a lot of trouble.
Yeah. So it was, we had people that, you know, would do that, but I just, it was something that, you know, you kind of reflect and people go, well, would you do it differently? I'm like, yeah, I would definitely do it differently. Cause really the thing that I didn't like was just taking on that added responsibility. It's like I had a certain set of responsibility as a stockbroker and kind of managing money and trading, but now I became the owner of the firm and now these people work for me. And then we ended up hiring more brokers and I had multiple branch offices. And so now the responsibility just, you know, was exponential. And it was like, I wasn't ready for that.
I don't see how you were at 21. I started my first company, interestingly enough, in Mexico when I was 22. I started a language academy down there because I was sick of teaching for another school while I was down there. Having to, you know, do the struggle between the other owners with us and the sales team was enough for me. And having make sure our children's teachers were there on time for the children's classes and having our German teacher there. And that was enough. I mean, you were dealing with people that were probably twice your age, correct?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
so, you know, the small gray haired geezers, they were in the Wall Street guys, they're 50, 60, 70 years old.
One that had to be intimidating, too. I mean, they probably had to look at you like, who's this kid? And you're like, oh, I'm the youngest owner of an investment bank in the history of the United States. And they're like, get out of here, kid.
I would come to these meetings and they didn't give me any respect. They didn't give me, it was incredible. It was not fun. Well, there was a lot of things that weren't fun about it.
Well, and I feel like, you know, nowadays too, you've got a lot of that expectation that these, you know, younger people have. You know, they always make fun of the millennials and say, you know, the millennial comes into your company and thinks he should be the CEO his first year out of school. There's these expectations. Us as, you know, older, grizzled people, we look at them like, oh, I remember when I was like you. And I'm sure you, I mean, it sounds like you've had that same, you know, kick in the pants from reality.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And now I live by this mantra that if you're not learning, you're dying, right? If you're not growing and learning and listening to podcasts like this and getting some insights, some wisdom, some tactics, some strategies, you're going backwards in life.
Yeah, it's fact. Right?
So it's like, you got to spend every day of your life learning because it's amazing. I used to say, would I know Phil's books? And I used to say it real cockily, right? Like I was a cocky guy, would I know Phil's books? And then after I got some wisdom and got my ass kicked a bunch, I'm like, I changed it to what I know Phil's books, but what I don't know Phil's library.
Fact. Yeah, I think, and what's interesting to me is, I think I want to get your perspective on this because we built a startup, we sold it, you know, very successful startup. I come from, you know, poverty, like about as poor as you can get in America, you know, Appalachian background, really poor neighborhood. And I had to do pretty much what you had to do is read books. And I didn't have anyone to kind of kick ideas back and forth on. I didn't have anybody to say, hey, how do you do this? How do you do that? How much of what you learned did you actually learn from your rich dad versus from one of these books that you were reading? Like what would you say? Because not everybody has the opportunity to grow up with that rich dad or ask the rich dad questions. Do you think you got a lot out of these books, like a majority of what you learned?
Absolutely. 99%. Like what I learned from my dad really didn't impart very much wisdom or anything with me. And actually my dad was an alcoholic. He had a serious alcohol problem. I remember going, dude, if he can do it, anybody can do it.
Well, my dad was an alcoholic. My dad was an alcoholic drug addict too. So I know where you're coming from and it can be rough.
Yeah. So for me, if it wasn't for the books, and the best book for me was the Bible, but if it wasn't for the books and the education, I don't think, you know, I couldn't have survived.
Yeah.
And again, the mindset, the philosophy, you know, the Jim Rohn philosophy, it's like, look, it's up to you. It's up to us. Like, you control your life and you're the producer of your movie. If you don't like it, change it.
That's right.
Rewrite a new script.
If it is,
and that's just so critical.
If it is to be, it's up to me. What was the largest, the biggest struggle that you had as you took over in terms of man management and learning the proper way to deal with subordinates as you were as your bank was growing?
Well, I think it was just managing people, right? So you know, I'm a trusting person by nature. I'm not a skeptical person, and I'm not a pessimist. I'm an optimist. So trusting people and managing people, which I still think today, I'm 58 now, I still think that's some of the best skill sets you can have if you want to build anything with significance. And obviously, you guys had an exit and you built your company, right? It's the people on your team. It's your ability to hire the right people and manage the right people.
Were you more of like hands-on, or did you let your people did you hire them and just let them do their thing?
Yeah, no, back then, because, you know, you're talking about stockbrokers and, you know, and again, if you've ever watched the movie The Wolf of Wall Street, we weren't quite crazy as that movie, but it was kind of like that, right? You give them a phone book or get them some leads and say, start buying for dollars. Here's the stocks we're recommending today. It was, you know, you think back to it now, the seasoned guy who understands wealth creation and finance and money and investing, you know, God, that was just pathetic.
Yeah.
How the industry worked, right? It was just, you know, it really wasn't amazing.
And it was feast or famine.
But we created a lot of jobs and helped a lot of entrepreneurs get their companies off the ground. You know, I remember being involved in the Microsoft, you know, offering and stuff like that. So you go back to those days, you go, it's guys like that that believe, you know, that believed in entrepreneurs that put the investors in the room to make the world happen.
That's right. Yeah. And those were the, especially in the digital space, you know, people like Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, you know, those guys were really at the beginning stage of this stuff. And it was, I mean, it really started in the 70s. I mean, people think of the technology industry as like the 2000s, you know, with the dot-com bubble and all that happening in 99, 2000. You know, people really think, you know, the 90s, the 2000s, but, you know, these people were building these companies 20 years before that.
So how did you, you're having all this success at the age of 21. How long did you hold on to the bank for?
Oh, I retired from the industry like 1990. And I moved out here to California and kind of got in the golf business and then started doing some. And then in the late 90s, I was an early adopter of the internet and started an ISP and had a little company called FirstNet Technologies. We were building websites for people. And it was, you know, kind of when you're kind of around that early stage entrepreneur and raising money for companies, you know, I really enjoy seeing the new technologies and being involved with that. And it's very, very rewarding to be involved in something that comes to fruition. And unfortunately, there's a lot more failures than successes in that world.
What was your mindset? You have this super successful bank, super young. I'm sure you're super well. You're not super wealthy, but you're very wealthy at that time. What was the drive inside of you that decided, you know what, I have had enough of this. I need a new challenge. And what drove you to technology? Like, what did you see in the internet that you thought, okay, here's an opportunity that I want to take advantage of?
I think you know, as you kind of move forward in life. And especially depending on what you're exposed to and what you've seen in your life, you kind of like foresee, you know, where the future's going. So when I saw the internet, I'm like, dude, this is going to be big. This is going to change the world. And kind of like, you know, now that I'm in e-commerce, like 3 years ago, I'm like, dude, e-commerce is going to be the biggest thing on the planet. We got to get in it now. So, you know, I think that's part of the drive, is just being involved with something that's going to be, you know, changing, you know, human mankind as we know it, history. And then also just, you know, chasing the dream of you know, the unicorns, right? So we grew up as an angel investor. We're looking for those unicorns, those investments that can create, you know, generational wealth.
For everybody that doesn't know, Unicorn's a company that's going to be valued over $1 billion.
You were in a way, you were in the right place at the right time too, because you're 21. You understand how the stock market works. You've got an investment bank. You said you participated in the initial offering for Microsoft. So you saw some of these things before anybody else was able to see them. So you're probably reading prospectuses for these offerings and saying, hey, man, this is the future.
No, you're exactly right. The only thing I didn't have is I didn't have the wisdom enough to hold on to the stock. You know, because again, as a stockbroker, right, back then, you're making money off trades. So you're getting, like, I give you one example. Do you guys ever remember the Go Video Dual Deck VCR?
Yeah.
So that guy comes in my office. He's got two VCRs soldered together in a cardboard box. He goes, I've invented the first dual deck VCR. So we raised the money. we did like a 10 cent offering, a 50 cent offering, and then, you know, like a dollar offering. And then he got sued by Sanyo, and all the big companies sued him. And basically, we thought we lost all of our money and went out of business. And we actually took it public. Stock went down to like a penny. And then he ended up winning the lawsuit. When he got his he got a patent issued, and then he won the lawsuit. The stock went to $22 a share.
Jesus.
So the people that got in our original offering at a dime, I'm selling them out at $5 a share. We're making 50 times our money, right? So you put in 10 grand, you're coming out with 500 grand.
Wow.
And everyone's happier than all get out, right? And I'm making them happy because I'm making big commissions and all kind of stuff. Then the stock gets 7, then the stock gets 9, then the stock gets 10. Now everyone's pissed off at you going, why'd you get me out of 5? I'm like, dude, we made 50 times our money, okay? All right? And then it went to 22. So it was like, and then you're going, God, I wish I wouldn't have sold out, right?
Oh, my God.
Skyrocketed.
It's kind of like when I bought Ethereum 2017 at 10 cents and then it went to $1,400 and I probably shouldn't have sold some of that.
Exactly. That's exactly.
That's cryptocurrency for anybody who doesn't know, you know, anything about cryptocurrency. That was one that just went insane for a year probably.
So we all wish we had the crystal ball, but you know, the bottom line is you got to get out there, and if you're not swinging at the pitches, you're not going to be having the opportunity.
Well, so you were surrounded by smart people. You read a lot. You believed in self-improvement early on in your life. It sounds like you played, you pretty much played life correctly. How important do you think location is? You know, we're here in Cincinnati in the Midwest. And, you know, everybody, you know, on the coast, they call it flyover country, right? Me and my co-founders, obviously, we were able to, you know, build something here. And by the grace of God, was able to grow that and sell that, surrounding ourselves with smart people. Not everybody is as lucky. And when we sold our business, I heard a stat that 1 in 100,000 startups sell for over $100 million. And if you sell for $100 million in San Francisco, that's not really a lot of money even. So if you are getting a startup together, one of the biggest challenges is raising money. You were blessed to be around investment bankers and probably know a lot of wealthy people. If you're in the Midwest or you're in any other part of the country that's not San Francisco, Southern California, or Southern California, what kind of advice could you give people?
So first of all, I'm from Colorado. So I was in Colorado. So I didn't move out here until after I retired from the business.
Which hasn't really been a tech hub until recently, right? I mean,
right. And as I was saying, Silicon Valley wasn't a tech hub back in the 80s either, right? So you think about that and you go, okay. And my vision was when I got introduced to the internet in 1997, I started angelnetwork.com. So I had this vision that we would create this nationwide network of angel investors. We would use video technology and live streaming to pitch on the internet. Now, of course, that was way ahead of its time, right? I literally have memory of pitching people how we're going to be streaming video on the internet in 1997, 98, 99. It's coming, right? And again, you know, 15 years later, it's finally here, and it's finally, you know, there's a TV screen on everybody's phone. But that was kind of like the vision going, because see, angel investors and early stage investors, they're so geographic in nature, right? So if you're in Denver, Colorado, people want to invest in Denver companies. If you're in San Diego, people want to invest in San Diego companies. And then you have your, you know, everyone's got their little channels. Like San Diego's a big biotech company. You want to raise money for biotech, this is the place. You want to raise money for tech, not necessarily the place. And like you just said, you know, you go to Silicon Valley, maybe people are telling me I should move there for what we're doing with LaunchCard because that's, we're a tech company and that's where we should be. I'm like, I'm not moving there. Not going
to
happen.
Well, you transitioned I think this is a good segue to talk about LaunchCard because the internet is your website, your store. That's your 24-hour marketing channel. That's your store's open 24 hours, and it could be anywhere. And your customers can come from anywhere. I feel like e-commerce is somewhat leveling the playing field for people that want to get a side hustle or to start something up. It could be a t-shirt store. You could be selling jelly like Mavis on our last episode. Explain it a little bit. Like, talk about the opportunities right now in e-commerce for people and what you do with LaunchCard.
No, it's one of the best home-based business opportunities that's ever hit the planet. And the reason why is that it's going to get it's growing and growing and growing. It's worldwide. And there's people that will make the products for you, ship the products for you, and you never have to touch the product. So you just have to become a guy that knows how to build a store, manage a store, and drive traffic to your store. And there's other places like Etsy where you can get good at search engine optimization and good at, you know, revenue, you know, just get good at optimizing so you can get the traffic from Etsy or Amazon. But everyone's buying online. The trust factor is going through the roof, especially now that COVID hit, right? I mean, oh, yeah. It's just exponentially increased what's going on. And people just don't know about these new technologies out there. So there's a couple of reasons why e-commerce has exploded. There's two of them we can really talk about that's really applicable today. One is print on demand. I'll come back to that in a second. And the other one is just drop shipping. So drop shipping is where a manufacturer or a brand has the product. They go, hey, you sell it for me. I'll give you a commission and I'll send it directly to your customer. You don't have to pay me for inventory. I'll just sell this little widget that I made directly to your customer. You sell it for me and I'll give you a commission. So you're like a middleman. You're like a salesperson. And then you have print on demand. And everybody knows, hey, I want to get t-shirts for my kids' basketball league or for my softball team. I go get a screen printer. I have to order 144 shirts. I get a screen printed and then I do that. Well, now there's new technologies where they can print on demand, one shirt at a time, one backpack at a time, whatever that is. And there's actually manufacture on demand. And what's coming soon is 3D printers, and 3D printers are going to be everywhere. And they're going to have all kinds of stuff that's 3D printed on demand. And so these people that have this technologies and these warehouses and these fulfillments where they can print on demand, manufacture on demand, and drop ship, they're looking for people that go, yeah, I'll set up a store and help you sell your stuff and you give me a commission. So it lowers the barrier of entry to basically anybody. And it really makes it easy to make money. And then again, you have the advent of Facebook and Instagram, these marketing channels where you can give Facebook, like I just got done running a campaign for one of our stores. We're giving Facebook a dollar and we got as much as $5 back the same day.
Wow.
In orders.
Wow.
So
do you have to be, and I know you're a marketing guru, a digital marketing guru. You've been around this stuff. You've seen how everything's changed. You've watched the Google algorithms change over the years and strategies change along with that when it comes to digital marketing. If I'm just a regular old guy and I'm in the Midwest or wherever I'm at, the South, and I want to start up an e-commerce store, what's the process that I take? And then what are the initial marketing steps I need to have in place to make sure that my site's going to be a success?
Well, that's a hard question to answer in just a few sound bites, because it depends on if you want to go into hard goods or soft goods, or, you know, let's say you knit something at home, or maybe you manufacture something in your garage, or maybe you just want to start a t-shirt business. So the answer to each one of those is a little bit different, but let's just take one for purpose of example. So on LaunchCart, you can set up a store. You say you want to start a t-shirt store, and you're passionate about snowboarding, you're passionate about hang gliding, you're passionate about skateboarding, you're passionate about something, you can go to places like Fiverr and place at different places to get graphics created and create your own line for skateboarders or for snowboarders. And then you can go online with Facebook and Pinterest and Instagram and Twitter and all these different places, and you can start building a following for that niche and showing them designs that are kind of cool, that have that emotional pull for that niche, and make sales. It's not hard. It's easy.
And Fiverr, for everybody who doesn't know what Fiverr is a marketplace. There's another one called Upwork, but it's a marketplace for freelancers. And a lot of times you can find things, you know, that maybe a local graphic designer like myself would charge you, you know, $100 or $150 an hour to do, where you could go on a Fiverr and pay for something. And it's a, you know, a lot of times it's a flat rate and you can have them design something for you. And then the other website you mentioned was Placeit. So if you don't have Photoshop and you don't have the skills to be able to take a logo or a graphic or whatever and put it on a shirt with a person on it, like a lifestyle photo, you can go to Placeit and literally upload a PNG file or whatever you have. Maybe it's a JPEG, and it'll automatically put it on a picture of a model for you. So it looks like you had these models taking your design and actually wearing your t-shirt, when in reality, you just went to Placeit and mocked something up.
I'll give you a quick, so we just did a deal. So we have Fran Drescher, the celebrity that used to be on the Nanny.
Yes.
And she has a foundation called Cancer Smancer. And so we put a bunch of their logos on the Placeit lifestyle images and mockups. And they said, wow, how did you put that photo shoot together so fast? They literally got people and did a photo shoot, right?
Graphic design
tricks.
That's
how great the images look. Yeah. That's how great they look, right? And then again, one other thing I'll share with you is which is another decent idea, is that's kind of like building a niche, building a brand. It's got some longevity to it, an asset you can build. And then other people go, I just want cash grab. I'm a cash grab guy. I want to make some money. And they do what I call chasing trends. So right now, people chasing trends would be, yes, you know, the Biden shirts, the Biden with the fly or with his name on his head. You got the Trump stuff. The
oh, my God. Trump I was going to ask you about this. This is so perfect because I think there's a lot of money to be made in trends.
Oh, yeah. No, just chasing trends always works. There's always something with a celebrity. There's always something with national news. And again, with print on demand, if you have your act together and you come up with some cool graphics and some cool thought processes, you can put them on some designs. It doesn't cost you anything. You can put them on some ads, Facebook ads, and you can target your audience. And you'll know within a couple hours whether it's going to go or not. Or within at least a day or two, you'll know. And that's the other thing, that for people that maybe they don't know, everybody can assume, probably knows this by assumption. Facebook has more data on you than you have on you, than anybody in the world has on you. If you have a Facebook account, you use Facebook. Literally, there's millions of data points. And because of those millions of data points, you literally can advertise whatever product it is, whatever design it is, whatever niche it is, to the exact potential customer. And not only do they know the exact potential customer based on a demographic and a psychographic, they also know who's actually whipping out their credit cards and buying, because they track that stuff. So not only can they, if you give them enough information and enough money with your advertising spend, they'll deliver you the exact buyers, which is, goes back to why I said a few minutes ago, we were doing an advertising campaign. I'm spending $1,000 in advertising and I'm getting $5,000 back in orders because Facebook found my buyers and sent them to our store. It's incredible.
Well, I did this because I was starting up I whipped up a really quick Teespring store when we first started this Side Hustle City group on Facebook. So we got a group, we got a page, and I was just putting advice up there for people. And we post, you know, motivational images and quotes from people all the time, and they get tons and tons and tons of shares whenever I, you know, put it out there and I try to advertise it. And people seem to really like positive messages. They really like shareable things like that that can kind of make them look smart too, I think. I did post up a quick Teespring store with the group's logo and everything on it. And to me, it seemed like one of the good things about a Teespring and some of these print-on-demand services is that people are going online and they're searching for, you know, fly on the head during presidential debate or whatever. And Teespring, I guess, has some SEO juice behind it.
Vince is never going to live that down.
He's never going to live that down.
He's a Hanover grad.
It's like the, oh, is he? Oh, wow.
That's where I went to college. That's my claim to fame. You know, he was friends with, I don't know if they're friends, but they're in the same church group at Hanover as Woody Harrelson.
Oh,
talk about two different divergent paths.
That's completely divergent paths. So yeah, I started up this Teespring store, and what I'm guessing is Teespring has some Google juice behind it. When somebody goes out and searches fly on Mike Pence's head, if you have a t-shirt that you got out there quickly, Teespring kind of does the job for you to push that out a little bit. Now, with LaunchCart, how do you guys differentiate yourself from Teespring? Because I essentially just started up that Teespring store so that I could go through the experience, so that I could tell others about it. What is
right.
In a lot of our guests, I mean, or a lot of our listeners, they've probably tried the Teespring thing, but what can you say about LaunchCart that makes it different?
Well, that's a really good question. So the difference is it's going to be on your domain, and it's an asset you're creating, and it's your customer. Like, right, with Teespring, it's on their domain, it's really their customer, and they're paying you a commission. Like, you can never take your store off Teespring and move it. So with us, we're going like, hey, let's think a little bit longer term. Let's talk about building an asset that could be sold or passed on to somebody in your family. And let's have it on your own domain. Your own. Part two is, you know, we are an entrepreneur. We are a startup. We have this big grandiose idea that, one, we're going to create a better platform than Shopify. And Shopify is the big, bad, you know, e-commerce platform out there. They're worth about $140 billion, up from $12 billion a few years ago. And we're saying, okay, we're going to take all the features and functionality that real internet marketers use on Shopify and eliminate this app and go download the app committee. And we're going to build a better platform than Shopify. So we're going to take the top 20 apps of the Shopify, which maybe I'm getting too in the weeds here, and build it into LaunchCart. So you have this better app that performs better, converts better, helps you make more money. Then what we're doing part B is we're creating a marketplace that's going to allow us to cross sell each other's products. So let's say I invented a new headset. I've got some headsets and some earbuds I'm doing, and you have maybe some phone holders for my car, right? So we have a similar kind of audience. You're going to be able to add your stuff to the marketplace. I'm going to add my stuff to the marketplace, and I go, oh, I need this. I could sell those phone things to my people, and you could sell my earbuds to your people, and then we cross sell. I drop shipping for you. You drop shipping for me. You pay me a commission. I pay you a commission. So I expand your distribution. You expand my distribution. So we're going to do that with everybody on the LaunchCart platform, as well as we're going to allow other manufacturers and brands to upload their entire catalog of products into our marketplace. So then let's say you invented a barbecue sauce and you want to sell your barbecue sauce, but you'd also like to sell barbecue grills and barbecue grilling kits and everything that goes with backyard type, you know, barbecues. You go into the marketplace, you type in the keywords, and you just click on products, and now they're for sale in your store on a dropship basis.
This is starting to sound to me like a
business opportunity.
This sounds like a little like an Etsy almost.
Kind of like an Etsy, yeah. It's like an Etsy, but it's like a Shopify meets AliExpress meets Amazon. Mm. Right. So you know it's your asset, it's your store, and then we're going to help expand your distribution by allowing you to put your products in the marketplace and allow other people to sell them, and then we're going to allow you to get other products from the marketplace to expand, you know, your average order value and the product set that's in your store. And again, we're going to do this worldwide, right? So it's like you're sitting there in Bangladesh, you're sitting there in South Africa, you're sitting there in India or Pakistan or Malaysia, and you want to start a business. I can help you change your life, right? Because you make $200 or $300 or $400 a month in Malaysia, it changes your life.
That's right.
Doesn't necessarily do that here in San Diego. And then we create a huge distribution channel. And again, you think of like Amazon has 5 million. People don't know this. Amazon is made up of little independent sellers like you and me sitting at home, either buying stuff from China, sending it to, you know, Amazon to ship out or shipping it out myself. They have 5 million individual sellers on Amazon.
That's right. People don't know that.
No, and it's Amazon's customer. They don't give us that customer data. Even if you're a big brand and you sell on Amazon, you don't get that customer data. It's Amazon's customer.
I feel like this is very important. One thing I've noticed is every celebrity, every football player, basketball player, they all seem to have their own brand now. I mean, Ludacris, you know, now he started out, he got his own headphones. Dr. Dre had the Beats by Dre headphones. Sean Puffy Combs, he's got his own, he's got Ciroc, so he's got his own alcohol. Ryan Reynolds, he has his own alcohol now. I feel like this is one thing you can really do, and I think you guys have already done this, right? You mentioned some celebrities before, but this seems like a really good way for them to like launch their brands and get them up somewhere, and then for you to kind of have, you know, exclusive access to your marketplace for these products.
Yeah, no, the celebrities and the influencers, they make more money off their e-commerce brand and their e-commerce sales than they do off their industry. So, you know, everybody going back to even 50 Cent and like all the ones you just named and what's the name, sold his tequila for $1 billion. Or how about Kylie Jenner? She's the youngest billionaire e-commerce, right? Billionaire. So that's like another really, I'm gonna launch a new thing called the CIBS Mastermind, Celebrity Influencers and Brands Mastermind. And I'm going to teach entrepreneurs how to get with celebrities and influencers and partner with them to manage their e-commerce store. Because they all want to have an e-commerce store. They all want to sell stuff to their fan base and their following, but none of them want to answer a support ticket. None of them want to source products. None of them want to build the store. So there's a whole business and a whole industry we're going to create in the next 3 or 4 years, helping people do that on the LaunchCart platform. And again, then you can find other people that already have an e-commerce store that's not being managed properly. There was this one girl named Pia Mia. I think she had like 40 million fans. She had an e-commerce store. I looked at her store in March, and she still had products from Christmas products on her store in March because it was so poorly managed.
Wow.
So just managing stores for celebrities, influencers, and brands is a huge business. And then every yoga studio, every restaurant, every bar, every golf influencer, every golf instructor, they all could use some merch stores and sell their t-shirts and their hats and their hoodies. So there's just endless ways to, you know, create income streams from the e-commerce, you know, that's happening on the world.
I just set up my account, my store, while I was listening to you speak. I'm ready. I can't watch the videos right now, but I'm ready to dive in.
Well, we're a little startup. We're getting there. And like I said, our commitment is to build a better Shopify that converts higher, more features, does better, and then create this marketplace and have them tied and integrated together. We'll be the only platform in the world that has that. And we're pretty excited about that. And we're raising capital and getting investors in for the first time. We're a year old. We've done about $1.5 million in revenues our first year. So we're doing okay. And we do. We manage stores for celebrities and we help them, you know, get things online. And influencers, that's the other thing too. Just think if you got with an influencer before they became big, which is kind of part of one of our strategies. Like we want to get with you when you're kind of looks like you have really the ability to get really big, but we're going to work with you to get your store up before you get big. So like, for instance, we're working on a potential contract with Aspen Ladd. She's ranked number 3 in the world for MMA, women MMA fighters. She needs to have a merch store and build her own brand. So we're helping her, you know, hopefully we're going to get the contract to help her do that. And then she becomes number 1, the amount of sales and revenues you can do with the t-shirts and hats and hoodies is off the chart. What was the first MMA girl fighter? Her name's blank in my mind.
Or, about Ronda Rousey?
Maybe Ronda Rousey. The
Ronda
one that
Rousey.
Got really big.
Ronda Rousey. Yeah. Well, she came out and she was in a press conference and she said, well, I just didn't want to be a do nothing bitch. Okay. Some little chasing trends internet marketer took that saying, don't be a do nothing bitch, sold 50,000 shirts in the next like 2 weeks.
Wow. There it is again. Trends.
Yeah. Chasing trends.
Chasing trends. Well, I got to ask. But, go ahead.
I was going to say real quick, Ronda Rousey should have been smart and said, I'm going to trademark that and create a brand about it. Because that could have been a whole brand that could still be going, you know, 5, 6, 7 years later.
Do you guys
don't
do that?
Do nothing good.
That leaves my question. How do you help with making sure that you don't do any trademark infringements or, you know, violate licensing agreements and things of that nature?
Yeah, that's a good question because I've noticed like people that put a Trump or a Biden t-shirt on, they'll go into Photoshop and they'll like posterize their face or something because can you not use like a pull an image off the internet and then use that as your graphic?
Well, that's a really good question. And so we always have to coach and teach people what they can and can't do, but we're not the police. You mentioned Teespring. Teespring was built, literally was built off people plagiarizing and stealing logos and stuff from the NFL and selling merch from the NFL online. And then of course they had to shut all that stuff down. But that's one of the things that Teespring was doing, an enormous amount of business of guys selling, you know, NFL branded stuff when it first started. So you can't do that. And we always coach people not to do that. But like with Trump, because Trump is the president of the United States, you can do anything you want with Trump right now.
Oh,
now,
once
he's back in office, but no, it's like public domain.
I bet you he hates the fact that he can't make money off everybody using his likeness.
Exactly.
I think he'd be about making a little bit of money off every t-shirt with his face on it. But I did notice people, they do something like they go in and they try to create like a vector graphic out of the photo or whatever that is. Or I've noticed even on YouTube, like you can't, like some people can't use more than what, like 7 seconds or 15 seconds or something like that of video from like, say, CNN or something before they have to like shut it off.
It's a really tough one doing the political stuff, right? Because again, Facebook shutting down the ads, you have to jump through all kinds of hoops to even do, political type ads, but depending on where you're advertising and what you're doing, how you do it, you can do some cool stuff. But there's just other stuff to chase trends. And I always tell people, look, you can create a store that's something you're passionate about. And again, a good example would be, I'm a hang glider pilot. Go online and try to find a really cool e-commerce store to find really cool designs for hang gliding or paragliding or flying in general. It doesn't exist. I keep threatening to do one. I just don't have the time, but I want to create a really cool store that has all kinds of products for pilots. I know where the pilots hang out. We're a real, you know, there's a niche group there in every city in the country and around the world, actually. And it's never going to be a $100 million business, but it'd probably be a nice little $200,000 a year business.
Well, you know the industry. It's a niche industry. Not everybody can know about it. Like you said, you know where people hang out. You know where your community is. That's really all you need to know to start.
And, you know, we know where I tell people to start. If you want to start a business in the e-commerce selling print-on-demand stuff, you know where I tell them to start? I call it families and grandmas, right? Because everybody's got a mom. Everyone's got a dad. Like, they have kids. They have grandparents. They have uncles. And selling gifts around the holidays, whether it's the Mother's Day, the Father's Day, the Christmas, the Black Fridays, their birthdays, their anniversaries, there's always an audience. There's always designs. There's always things you can do. And I'm looking at one that we're creating right now that just says, thank you for being the dad. You didn't have to be, right? So perfect gift for the people who want to buy something for their dad. So it's just endless, and you always can make sales. The market's never going away.
So it requires a little bit of creativity and foresight to actually pay attention. I always tell people this too. It's like, if you've got a 9-to-5 job and you want to be an entrepreneur and you're in whatever industry you're in, you need to start paying attention to opportunities. I think, you know, there's always companies out there looking for ways to get more efficient. And you're sitting there working there. You're being exposed to their, you know, their systems every single day. And if there's a way you can improve that system, you could start a business doing it. You just have to pay attention. And in this industry that you're talking about, you're saying just pay attention to trends, pay attention to things that are out there. You've got a platform that people can literally go on and sign up and get going. And I'm guessing you guys also provide some training and some, there's some learning videos on there.
Videos that you get, that you need to get to before you can even.
Yeah, we have a whole training library, and we're constantly training and doing that. And we're teaching people how to do research. Like, there's this thing that's one of the coolest tools ever. It's just fun. Like, have you ever gone to Google Trends and like check out what's trending, what's going on Google Trends? So you can type in Google Trends, and like, if you type in coffee mugs, you're going to see the coffee mugs start peaking this time every year since they were tracking it, right? So you use Google Trends to see what's trending and what the top trending. And by doing that, you can always find some ideas, or you go search on Etsy and you type in, you know, best Mother's Day gifts, or, you know, gifts for grandma, or coffee mug gifts for grandma, or whatever that is. And you get all kinds of inspiration, and you can do that on Amazon. And it's not hard to find ideas and get inspiration. And then you just take it and make it for your niche. And then I tell people, you want to take it one step further, double niche it. So grandmas who love Chihuahuas, the big market, right?
Yeah, you got a grandma. It's there, yeah.
And they have a Chihuahua, and you create a design that talks to the grandma who loves the Chihuahua, they're going to want to buy that because they love their Chihuahua and their grandma. So there's all kinds of things where you just double niche it. And, you know, and then again, from an advertising standpoint, you can tell Facebook, only show this to grandmas who love Chihuahuas. And Facebook will adhere to those requirements.
You know what brings loyalty for these, like this print on demand, is if you have comfortable cotton. I mean, it's just something as simple, but the actual product is really nice, because I've printed stuff for, you know, for fun or whatever, groups of guys go to bachelor parties, and the shirts are just, they itch and then don't last after like 3 washes. And I'm assuming the product quality here was one of the things that you guys were looking out for when you were doing your vendors for your t-shirts, right? Like, you wanted something that was going to last.
I'm not, I'm not sure when that maybe was. Is that Kyle that said that?
Yeah, that was Kyle.
But here's what's happened to this industry. And again, you know, being this investment banker background, I think things a little bit differently. But screen printing as we know it is going to go away. It'll disappear. I don't even think it will exist 10 years from now, because it's hazardous waste, right? All the screens and the burning of the screens and all the inks. It's not good for the environment. And all of the manufacturers of the apparel and all the blanks, you know, the Gildans, the t-shirts, the Hanes, the Bellas, the Next Apparels, American Apparels, they're manufacturing their clothing differently to absorb the inks so they last longer through washes. The inks are changing. The technology that prints on the clothes has changed. And even in the last 3 years, I'm like, in the last 3 years, it's changed drastically. And now they're doing print on demand for drapes. So you have drapes that are maybe, let's say, 4, 5, 6 feet wide and 10 feet tall. You can do print on demand drapes with your own designs, your own pattern. Everything's going this way, and they're printing this stuff, and the products are getting better and better and better. And it's just going to continue that way. Even the big boys like Nike, they're looking at going to print on demand because they're tired of getting stuck with inventory and doing blowout sales and having to move inventory around the country based on what's moving and what's not moving. And they love the idea of print on demand.
Yeah, I mean, just-in-time inventory revolutionized warehousing. Why wouldn't print on demand revolutionize, you know, T-shirt and clothing sales?
Well, I actually heard something the other day. I was watching a video, one of these influencers, you know, about making money online. And I, you know, I watch those things on YouTube all the time so that I can post them in our group. And the guy said, you know, you always hear about the 1%. You hear about the 1% of people who go out and start companies and make all this money, you know, and it's 1%, right? He said, but it's not really 1%. He's like, you just have to compete with all the other people that actually want to make money. He said, most people don't want to be rich, believe it or not. Most people just want to go to work every day and make enough money to pay their bills and send their kids to college and retire. So you're not really competing with a majority of the country. You just got to compete with the small percentage of people that are out there hustling.
That's a good point.
So it's not 99%. It's not 100% of America you're competing with. It's actually 1%. So your odds are actually much better than you think they actually are. And I've got to ask you something, because I read in your bio here, you used to work with Master P. Now, I grew up in a rough neighborhood, and I used to listen to, you know, all the Master P stuff, all the rappers he used to promote. You know, that was my thing. Like, you go outside, you had to get in a mindset to go outside because you never knew who was out there trying to start with you. So it was motivational for me. So when I read what he worked with Master P, how did that whole thing happen?
That's an amazing story. Okay, so I got invited to speak at this event called the Pro Athlete Business Summit. Okay. And I was doing a little speech on marketing, and I just got waylaid from the market crash in 2008. Like, I literally lost millions of dollars in 2008, the crash. And actually, $3.6 million disappeared one day. But I get invited to speak at this event. I go to this event. I am literally the only white guy there. And I'm filled in this room with probably 150, 200 African-American athletes. But for some reason, there was no white athletes there. And so, and you can imagine, these are all NFL players and retired NFL players, and they're big guys. I'm like a little, like, 5'11 guy. You know, I'm 190 pounds.
So not only are you the only white dude, you're probably the least in shape out of everyone else there, too.
Exactly. And then they're like 6'4", 6'3", 250, 320.
Oh,
and
wow.
Anyway, I had invented some software to protect kids on the internet. My daughter had typed her name, Candace, into a search engine, got to a porn site. So that's a whole nother story. So at our lunch table, I organized what I called a little snap, where we would just like network. So I said, okay, there's eight of us at the table. I'm the eighth person, seven other guys. I said, let's go around the table and everyone say who they are and what they do or what you want to do. So we're networking. So we kind of get done doing that. And then Master P says, well, what do you do? Now, again, at this point, I did not know who Master P was. I did not listen to rap, did not know rap, nothing. It's just nothing. I said, well, my name's Greg, and my daughter stumbled across a pornographic website, and I have this vision to make the internet safe for kids. And I invented some software to protect kids from the internet, from the predators, pornography, hate, and violence on the internet. And I also want to teach kids financial literacy. And that was it. So about an hour later, I'm in the hallway and I'm sitting at my computer working, and Master P and this other guy comes up to me, and Master P, if you know him, he's about 6'4". He was about 240, 250.
And he's a ball player.
Guy was like six. Yeah. The other guy with him was like 6'7" and had to be at least 350. He was huge. And he said, hey, show me what you got. And at that time, I just closed the deal with DreamWorks, and I created the world's first Shrek Kids Safe browser. So I showed him the Shrek Kids Safe browser, and he's like, you got a deal with DreamWorks? I'm like, yeah. I got a contract with DreamWorks. And so he knew, because of his industry background, if you got a deal with DreamWorks, you got something. So instantly, I had the instant credibility, instant stuff. He says, I want my daughter to be your spokesperson. I said, who's your daughter? He said, oh, she's going to be the next Hannah Montana. Now, again, I had daughters. I knew who Hannah Montana was. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, this pro athlete thinks his daughter's going to be the next Hannah Montana, this poor guy. He says, no. He goes, pull up her MySpace account. So he pulled up her MySpace account. And this 11-year-old girl has 9 million followers on MySpace.
Wow.
And I went, wow. And so I said, don't mess with me, man, because we're talking about protecting kids. And it was that's how I met him. And so he walks off, and he had another girl. He had a girl with him that was like 6'1", and she was like 2'10". And it was his assistant. She said, okay, talk to my assistant. We'll get back to you. So I'm talking to the assistant. I go, who is that? He goes, that's Master P. And I said, Mr. P? She goes, no, Master P. And she goes, you don't know who Master P is? And she just looks like, you are one dumb white boy.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I'll tell you one quick little story to wrap this up, because this is kind of cool. So he calls her up, and he says that he wants $500,000 for to have his daughter be the spokesperson for my platform. So I said, And now the assistant's on the phone with him. She puts the phone kind of to her arm so he can't hear. And he says, he wants $500,000 a day and they have his daughter do this, that, and everything. I said, this is great. We're going to get this deal done. But I said, you need to tell him I want $2 million to allow her to be my spokesperson. And she looks like, no, that's not how this works. You got to pay him. I said, no. You don't understand how this works. He's got to pay me. She goes, no. I said, tell him. Come on, tell him. She goes, I'm not telling that. This is not how this works. I said, give me the phone. So she gave me the phone. I said, hey, P, here's what's going on. I'm not going to allow your daughter to be the spokesperson for my company unless you invest $2 million in my company. He said, no, that's not how this works. You got to pay me. I said, no, that's not how it works. If you think for 1 minute I'm going to have an inauthentic person be a spokesperson for my technology company and be involved with protecting and educating kids and not being an investor and a part of my company, I don't want it. Forget it. And he's like, hold on a sec. I'll be there in a few minutes. He hung up the phone, came and got me, went on a walk with me, and could not believe that I said that to him and said, okay, we're going to do a deal. And I got his daughter to be our spokesperson for nothing.
If you would have listened to Master P's music back in the day, you probably wouldn't have said that to him. The whole No Limit Records crew would just, straight gangster rap. Like, I mean, 100% gangster rap. Like, it just built on what NWA did, you know? But yeah, wow, that's wild. Yeah, just growing up listening to his music and then hearing your story just now, I'm like, no, you didn't say that. Oh my God.
I don't have enough courage to say that in people in my neighborhood, let alone.
If he would have been like, hey, Greg, I'm going to come over to your house and we're going to go for a walk, I'd be like, hang up the phone. No thanks, Master P.
I have so many cool stories with that deal that we did. He came to my house and played basketball with me in my street, and we've had all kinds of cool stuff. He's a super cool
amazing ball player.
You know, the interesting thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The interesting thing about him is he doesn't have a bunch of gatekeepers. When you do business with him, you do business with him. I've never seen a guy do business like him. It's amazing. I've done business with a lot of successful people, and he's the only person ever that didn't have gatekeepers and assistants and multiple assistants to talk to my attorney and talk to my assistant and I'll show up for this meeting. I dealt with directly with him. Even today, I still just text him directly. I directly communicate with him and only him.
So, I mean, I'm sure that made your business relationship way smoother. Way smoother. Nobody screws up communication like gatekeepers do. I don't know if they do it on purpose or what, but they it's like playing telephone over the telephone.
Yeah.
It's like, please have him call me at this time, at this number. And he either calls the wrong number or they don't call you back and they didn't get the message.
Or they're trying to push you off. They don't think you're right for him. So they're like, oh, let me just blow this guy off. Like, you know, we'll just keep running him around in circles until he finally gives up.
So you got to bypass that by, you know, having the courage to let him know that the deal that he was offering wasn't the deal that you were doing. Which is pretty awesome.
Well, no, I gained the most amount of respect ever because I had my principles and I wasn't going to pay somebody to help me protect kids. I wasn't going to. I don't care who you were.
Wow.
And it was just a principle that I had, right? So he recognized that was a principle that I was holding dear, that I didn't feel that I had to pay somebody to help me protect kids from predators and pornography. That to me, it wasn't authentic.
No. Right? Well, I think he understood that.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. You're just all these stereotypes I have in my head about who Master P is. You've just like, you're changing my mindset about Master P right now.
Yeah.
After listening to his music, now he seems like a really nice guy. And I'm like,
No, seriously, he's a family man and he's a Christian. He prays and he's got the right philosophy, the right mindset. He's big on education. You know, when we were dealing with his daughter got on Nickelodeon and she had to do her schooling. And if she didn't get good grades, she was off the show. I don't care who it is, Nickelodeon. I don't care what. And he even put in the contract that if my daughter doesn't get good grades, the show's canceled. She's off. You know, stuff like that. He really is. He's a really principled man. He really is.
Well, I think too, you mentioned something and faith for me was a big thing too. You know, my dad wasn't around. He was off doing drugs, doing whatever, you know, he left a long time, which is kind of a blessing for us because we kind of broke that cycle of alcoholism and drug abuse in my family. And to this day, you know, the only alcohol I've ever drank was at mass at the Eucharist. You know, when I go to accept the Eucharist, that was the only that's the only alcohol I've ever drank in my life. And, you know, and not only that, I feel like, you know, in a way, the church disciplined me because my grandma, she was an old school German Catholic, right? And, you know, we were moved around a lot. I've moved so many times in my life, it's crazy. But we'd always get kicked out of a place. We'd move with my grandma in a little one-bedroom apartment, but we always had to go to church, you know, especially if you were living with grandma. You had to go to Mass, right? And I feel like there's something about, at least, I mean, you know, and I'm Catholic, there's something about the discipline of the church, standing, kneeling, saying particular prayers, things like that. And it may not just be the Catholic Church. I'm sure there's a lot of other churches out there, and they don't even necessarily have to be Christian. But there's something about, I think, religion that even when you don't have that discipline in your life, I feel like it disciplined me, where there was a lot of other people in my neighborhood that did not go to church, did not practice in any way. And, you know, they're probably all in jail or dead right now.
I mean, I think if you look at the Rockets back in the 90s with Hakeem Olajuwon, how resolute he was in his Islamic faith, and the fact that he seemed disciplined. He seemed like he didn't have the ego that a lot of the superstars had. You know, I think that was part of it, because that's another one, super rigid, super, if you're really into the dogma of it, really, really lends to discipline and accountability in your life. So I think that, yeah, not to go super religious or political in this podcast, but I agree with both what you guys are saying. So I really appreciate everything that you, I mean, all the time you gave us. I'm super excited to launch my store, because I need, you know, as much side income as I can. I've got two kids in college. I got to pay for it somehow.
Well, we've both read multiple streams of income. And I think, Greg, this is one of those multiple streams. I mean, if you want to get seven streams of income, your store should be one of them.
No, absolutely. And then again, for people that want even a faster way to cash, building stores for people, right? Going to get the local restaurant, the bar, the yoga studio, go, I'll build you a store for $1,000. Have them charge you, you know, get the $1,000, get on a launch cart, build them a store in 3 or 4 hours and go build them another. You know, I have people that their whole business model is building stores on launch cart. Because our platform is so easy, right? And you've used Teespring. It's very similar to how Teespring is, but you have to have a logo, a little bit of branding, a little bit of branding colors. But you can set up a store for somebody in maybe 4 to 8 hours worth of work, and people will easily pay $800 to $3,000 for that. We get it all the time.
As much time as people spend on social media, if they directed that time into some kind of money-making effort, like your store, and did all this stuff, you know, they got Reels, they're using Snapchat, they're using all these different things that they know those platforms. And it's like, look, you're not putting anything up that's making you any money. Like, do something, right? Like, put that effort and that time into something that could actually turn in, you know, be that side hustle that turns into your main hustle someday.
Well, and, you know, to me, you know what my excuse for that is that people don't know what they don't know, right? So that's what's so cool about guys like you, where you guys have your podcast trying to expose people to new things. I always tell people, spend your life exposing yourself to something new, to something you don't know. Because now people who listen to this go, well, I didn't know about LaunchCar. I didn't know you could do that. Let me go check it out. Next thing you know, they're making $100,000 a month, 3 months, 4 months, 6 months from now or something. Who knows?
Well, and you're right? Probably a lot like me. You just hate seeing people struggle. Like somebody who's successful, you know, a lot of times I think if you don't have anything really going on in your life, you know, you're always concerned about yourself. But once you see some success and you have, you know, multiple streams of income, you got things coming in, you stop worrying so much about yourself and you start looking at other people and saying, man, I hate watching people struggle because I no longer struggle. And I know what I did to get out of that struggle. And you want to share that with people. And it sounds like, I mean, you know, reading your bio and talking to you today, that's one of the things you're passionate about.
And I love helping and coaching people. It's like part of me wants to get, you know, the funding done with our Series A, hire some more people and really get back to doing that, because I'm good at it. I'm a good communicator. I'm a good inspirational guy. God gave me the gift of some of that stuff. And I can also speak from experience, not like I'm like making stuff up, right? I can speak it from experience, but it is very rewarding to help people. It's very rewarding. And there is a lot of people that they do have their job, but they're not happy with their job, or they need to make a few extra. They need to make enough money to pay a car payment or to pay the insurance payment. And that's not hard to do. There's so many ways to do it. It's not hard. That's you just got to have the right coaching, the right mentor, and the right information.
So you're doing your Series A offering right now?
Right now we're finishing up a safe offering, which is it's like a seed round. And then we're going to roll into our Series A in first quarter next year, hopefully at a 3 to 5 times valuation of what we're at now. We're doing a small $1 million raise. We've got 300,000 that we've raised so far, another 700,000 to go. We think we'll have that done in the next 2 weeks to 30 days. And then we'll kind of use that money to get some more traction, get some of the feature sets done, and then be able to justify. So right now we're offering to the $10 million post-money valuation, and we want to get to a $30 to $50 million valuation by January or February for the Series A.
That's awesome. Yeah, and this is really, once you start getting into Series A, Series B, that's really funding your growth. So at this point, you know, Greg has a product. He has some success. He sees that, you know, people are signing up for it. He has some stories to tell investors. And at this point, he's, you know, the platform is successful and he's looking to really get it out there. And correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, but it sounds like you guys are good to go at this point, and you're looking to bring some other people on so you can really push this thing out there.
Yeah, you know, COVID kind of, you know, gave us that, you know, me as a CEO, like this anxiousness going, man, we need to bring in some real money and we need to start capturing market share around the world. It's just so hot. The time is now. And we want to bring on, we have like 3 developers right now. I want to like double or triple that team to buy 10 developers. And I want to just go, you know, if I get $10 million, I want to spend $3 or $4 million just on marketing all over the world.
That's right. Well,
Greg, we can change communities, right? So
you totally can. I mean, this tool could be the way people change their lives and in the way things are going right now, everything going so digital, people working from home now. I mean, there's timing to this as well. And I think people need to really start looking at platforms like yours and getting some traction now, because, you know, more and more people are going to start doing this thing. And, you know, the earlier you get started, the better. So Greg, how do people get a hold of you? How do people learn more? I mean, is there a book? Should I get on your website and read a blog? You know, how do you get your all this knowledge you have and all this experience meeting these great people? How do you get this out to people?
Yeah, you know what? I'm pretty active on Facebook and our Facebook group. And right now I'm 100% focused on LaunchGuard, because you know this too, with what you guys have accomplished. You know, you can't spread yourself too thin. You have to focus. So my focus really right now is LaunchGuard. So LaunchGuard.com. We have an official LaunchGuard group. I'm constantly doing training in our LaunchGuard group. I'm going to start going into some Facebook ads training soon. And then, of course, you know, my website is GregRiter.com. And my last name's spelled with a W, like a typewriter, W-R-I-T-E-R. And then I don't do very much on Instagram or Twitter or anything like that. I do a little bit, but I'm really focused on LaunchGuard, so that's the best way to get in communication with me, or if you need anything there.
So GregRiter.com, and then you've got CelebrityLifestyleBrands.com, correct?
Yeah, that's our parent company that owns LaunchGuard. And then my partner, Bert, he works with Damon John and Catherine Zeta-Jones, and he works with different celebrities with licensing and branding and brand management, stuff like that. Right now, I've kind of taken a sabbatical from working with him on Celebrity Lifestyle Brands to build LaunchGuard.
Awesome, Greg. Well, I really appreciate your time today. And I know you're a busy guy, so we'll let you go.
Feel free to come back on anytime you want to, because I feel like we've just scratched the surface of what you know and what you could give to our audience.
Send me some links to where I can promote your podcast, too, because we have obviously a lot of entrepreneurs and home-based business people in our database. Be more than happy to share your podcast and share it on social media and that kind of stuff as well.
Really appreciate that. Get it to you here very shortly.
Okay. Well, I sure appreciate it, guys. Thank you very much. And you got to do what I do. You got to wake up every day with an attitude of gratitude and then tell somebody you'll love them. I know you'll have a better day.
Love it. All right, Greg. Thanks a lot.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Bye.